www.univision.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
En El Salvador preocupa el creciente número de personas que emigran en busca de un trabajo huyendo de la violencia. Franklin Barahona reporta.
Aproximadamente 250 personas migran diariamente de nuestro país rumbo a diferentes naciones, no solo al norte del continente, sino también a otras zonas de la región. Estos son algunos de los datos que maneja el Grupo de Monitoreo Independiente de El Salvador, quienes sostienen que es casi imposible tener un dato exacto de los miles de salvadoreños y salvadoreñas que buscan migrar, no solo por causas económicas, sino que en los últimos años por razones de seguridad. Así lo afirma Vinicio Sandoval, del Grupo de Monitoreo Independiente de El Salvador.
Lamentablemente la persona migrante se está convirtiendo en un elemento de explotación en muchos sentidos. A nivel local hay una explotación del migrante laboral. Se da también en los países, pero de repente en los países de tránsito, como México, desde que tenemos casos de personas que han sido utilizadas para, desde hechos delictivos, o de repente obligadas a participar de las consecuencias de los mismos hechos delictivos, mujeres que han sido explotadas sexualmente, jóvenes que también están siendo explotados en algún tipo de cultivo ilícito, bueno, una serie de elementos.
Otra de las organizaciones que trabaja este tema a nivel mesoamericano es el Centro Internacional de Derechos Humanos de Personas Migrantes, que ve con preocupación que la legislación salvadoreña en materia de inmigración no haya sido reformada aún, debido a que está vigente desde 1950. Además, recomiendan tomar en cuenta las variaciones en la dinámica migratoria en el contexto regional y continental. Así lo dijo Gabriela Richard, directora ejecutiva de CIDEUN, Costa Rica.
La ruta migratoria es la más preocupante también, ¿verdad? Esa ruta migratoria que está pasando de todo, que se están desapareciendo migrantes muchísimo, que están matando muchísimos niños y niñas, muchos hombres y mujeres en esa ruta migratoria por el crimen organizado. Creo que eso tiene que comenzar a asumirlo porque ya es urgente que esa visión de ser un país que nada más la ruta va hacia el norte, ¿verdad? Y nada más queremos ir a buscar un trabajo. No, ahora las personas están migrando por protección.
El CIDEUN reconoce además que a pesar de los muchos retos que aún persisten en materia migratoria, existen avances importantes, sobre todo por las y los salvadoreños en el exterior. Además, agregan, es importante que el Estado reconozca que nuestro país se ha convertido no solo en un país de origen, sino también en una nación de destino y de tránsito, pues muchos y muchas compatriotas de la región buscan refugio o trabajo en El Salvador. Desde ARPAS, El Salvador, les informó Franklin Barahona.
Continúa la violencia política en Honduras. José Peraza, de Radio Progreso, informa.
5 meses después de realizadas las elecciones generales en Honduras, donde se eligieron al presidente, a los diputados y a los alcaldes de los municipios, en un pueblo de nombre San Luis, en el departamento de Comayagua, en el centro de Honduras, aún no se sabe quién ganó las elecciones. El Tribunal Supremo Electoral, organización máxima que rectora los procesos eleccionarios en Honduras, declaró empate entre los dos principales candidatos, empate que lo dirimió lanzando una moneda al aire. El resultado final fue que Lenny Flores ganó como alcalde, pero 5 meses después, la Corte Suprema de Justicia le dio el triunfo a su opositor, Santos Iván Zelaya, del partido en el gobierno, el Partido Nacional. A raíz de esta situación, ya se reporta la primera persona muerta en el municipio a causa de los disturbios. También la alcaldía fue incendiada. Los candidatos a alcalde se acusan mutuamente. Escuchemos a Santos Iván Zelaya.
Aquí el responsable directo de todo esto es el señor Lenny Flores Suazo y los seguidores de él en el municipio de San Luis.
Pero Lenny Flores no se queda atrás y devuelve las acusaciones.
Yo sinceramente lamento las declaraciones de este muchacho que desde inicio del proceso electoral, él ha venido haciendo comentarios irresponsables y comentarios de una persona sin ética.
El recién electo presidente de la Asociación de Municipios de Honduras, el doctor Nery Cerrato, manifiesta que debe haber un pacto de gobernabilidad entre el Partido Liberal y el Partido Nacional para poder solventar el conflicto en este pueblito hundido en la miseria.
Tiene que haber un pacto por la gobernabilidad de San Luis. Y eso significa que los dos partidos le den una salida política a este conflicto, que pasaría por el tema de la tolerancia, de aceptar una gobernabilidad que podría ser co-gobierno ahí local.
Para el analista político Hermilo Soto, la situación en el municipio de San Luis es muy preocupante, ya que hubo un avance en la creación de más partidos políticos en Honduras, pero las instituciones y la legislación se quedó en el pasado.
Nosotros tenemos una nueva situación política, nuevas fuerzas políticas emergentes, donde tenemos un sistema de partidos más competitivo, pero tenemos instituciones que están totalmente obsoletas y tenemos un marco jurídico institucional que no responde a esa nueva realidad política que estamos viviendo.
Los habitantes del municipio de San Luis en Comayagua están sin paz, sin alcalde y sin palacio municipal debido a la crisis política que generó y sigue generando la falta de respuestas efectivas de las autoridades del Tribunal Supremo Electoral para resolver un empate en la disputa de la alcaldía del municipio. Desde Radio Progreso en Honduras, para Radio Pacífica en Los Ángeles, California, les informó José Peraza.
La embestida mediática de Estados Unidos y sus aliados contra Rusia ha provocado discusión y debate sobre la posibilidad de una nueva guerra fría entre Washington y Moscú. El sociólogo norteamericano James Petras ha escrito más de 60 libros sobre la geopolítica internacional, más de 1,000 artículos para periódicos y revistas, y es frecuente invitado a comentar sobre temas de la guerra y la paz entre los pueblos. Él dice que de ocurrir una repetición de hostilidades podría provocar un efecto boomerang contra Norteamérica.
Obviamente, el fuente de la tensión y el conflicto es la esfuerza que hizo los Estados Unidos a derrocar el gobierno elegido democráticamente y el hecho que impusieran un gobierno, un junta que no tenía ninguna legitimidad, que era incondicional con OTAN, con la Unión Europea y buscaba expulsar los bases rusos y convertirlos en bases de OTAN. También querían ilegalizar el uso del lenguaje ruso entre una región que cobra más de un tercio del país, que nombraran gobernadores no elegidos, en la mayor de los casos oligarcas. Eso es el fuente de la rebelión de los pueblos del este de Rusia y ahora extendiéndose al capital. El gobierno actual, la junta mejor dicho, no tiene respaldo ni siquiera en el capital del país. Han perdido un tercio del país, la policía, el ejército, han juntado con los demócratas contra la junta. El gobierno confiesa que no ya tiene control sobre grandes regiones del país. El Fondo Monetario y las otras instituciones ahora están tratando de flotar el régimen porque ya está en bancarrota. Han cortado exportaciones militares con Rusia para paralizar la producción de helicópteros y misiles entre la coparticipación ruso-ucrano. Entonces, ¿cómo uno puede esperar que Rusia no reacciona frente a las agresiones? Hasta ahora han actuado con mucha razonabilidad, han actuado con mucha paciencia, pero las provocaciones están multiplicando y Washington está utilizando el pretexto que están actuando contra un agresor y fortalezando los aviones de guerra en los países bálticos, en Polonia, está mostrando fuerzas terrestres. Yo creo que la culpa para lo que está surgiendo como una guerra fría lo tiene 100% la Casa Blanca en Washington. Estados Unidos tiene menos contactos y intercambios, inversiones y comercio con Rusia que Europa. Las grandes empresas en Europa, los petroleros BP, Inglaterra y las otras empresas metalúrgicos, por ejemplo, Siemens, tienen muchas inversiones con Rusia. Yo creo que hay una gran discrepancia entre las grandes empresas europeas involucradas con Rusia y no quieren perjudicar esta relación y el gobernante en Washington, que es el más bélico, el más militarista, si quieres, frente a esta diferencia que tienen en el tratamiento de Ucrania. Europa no está unificada. El ex primer ministro de Alemania, Gerhard Schröder, está celebrando su cumpleaños abrazando al presidente Putin, mientras Merkel está confundida, no sabe cómo reaccionar, presionado por Obama, y el otro lado recibiendo muchos mensajes de la gran industria alemana que no debe perjudicar, no debe implementar sanciones que perjudican miles y miles de puestos de trabajo en Alemania. Yo creo que Rusia va a responder si las sanciones aumentan y son más severos. Rusia puede tomar medidas en contra. Por ejemplo, podría expropiar las empresas extranjeras en Rusia. Puede vender los bonos de tesoro que utilizan como moneda de reserva. Puede limitar el flujo de energía hacia el occidente y Canadá. Realizarlo a partir de pactos con los países asiáticos, principalmente China. Puede apoyar movimientos de liberación en los países que están luchando contra el imperialismo. Puede limitar las inversiones rusas en los países occidentales, repatriar los capitales de los bancos en el mundo occidental. Hay muchas palancas que Rusia tiene y puede utilizar, y es el problema que la agresión norteamericana, si aumenta, puede tener un efecto boomerang y perjudicar a los Estados Unidos más que Rusia.
Era el sociólogo norteamericano James Petras, autor de más de 60 libros sobre la geopolítica internacional, más de 1,000 artículos en periódicos y revistas, y es invitado frecuente para comentar sobre temas de la guerra y la paz entre los pueblos. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Richard Macías, Lolita Macías y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Y entonces, en inglés, Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming up in English. Today is May 1st, 2014. Stay tuned for... lots of voices from the street. We've had a lot of voices from the studio in the last show or two. Now let's catch up on what's going on in the streets. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, or perhaps you're listening in at freakradio.org. Stay tuned.
The only problem for only one reason that president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless. Problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there
Hey, and that was Five with Land. I'm Robert with Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. In the studio with me is the redoubtable Dr. Michael Grady, or O'Grady, actually. How are you doing, Doctor?
I'm doing well, Robert, and hello to everyone out there in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I know you just came from the American Friends. What are we going to call that group?
Well, that's a good point. It's called AFCSF. Down further there. Tells
I think it's the Association of Faith Communities, which is a group that's running the running the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is a small program that provides shelter for a number of people, 20 people per night, in a variety of churches. And they are well-intended and do some nice work for 20 people. Of course, the homeless population of Santa Cruz is 1,500 to 2,000. And I'm always making comments that people who somehow think this program is going to grow to deal with that number of people are not really realistic.
There is potential there for growth. I don't know whether it will happen or not. Though there's potential. Each of those churches could be housing homeless every night, not just rotating once in a while.
Yeah, I'm tired of that whole discussion because I heard it for 25 years. I've heard this. And there was a point where the program reached 80 people.
Really?
And then it stopped.
Oh, really?
Probably because they felt they had to fund it, and through transportation, the money for the gas got to be too much.
Yeah.
And the point is, it's a small charity program. And I put probably at least 100, if not more, hours into expanding the program in the late 80s and early 90s. And I don't feel bad about doing that. But I certainly don't want to give people the impression that this is a great new effort that everyone should put 100% of their energies behind, with the expectation that it's going to actually serve a majority of the homeless people. It won't.
Well,
it'll
serve
a small number of homeless people.
That was very good of you to help them out, to expand the program. I'm going to put your name in for canonization.
You should. I'm a saintly fellow. I've known that for some time. But let's move on from my beatitude to, I've got street interviews here. I guess I should also mention, for those interested, there have been a number of things that have happened in the last few days. There was an ACLU meeting on Monday, American Civil Liberties, or Lack of Civil Liberties in Santa Cruz Union, the meeting that you attended, Michael, very faithfully, and you paid close attention to that meeting and described it in great detail to me afterward, almost photographically. I was impressed with your memory. Pretty good, pretty good.
68 plus.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the heck you... But in any case, then there's also been other things, like there was a sanctuary series of films, I guess, on... what was it? Was it Tuesday night? I think it was Tuesday night.
They're going on still.
And the real film festival goes on. But these were films at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, concerned with Sanctuary Campground, campgrounds up and down the coast, by Jeremy Leonard. Sanctuary Campground was both those films are older films. The second by Brent Adams. And then there was Annette March, who did, I guess it's called Faces of the Homeless. You can find her work in the Santa Cruz Public Library main branch. Yeah. And she's going to be on the air on Sunday here on Free Radio. She's going to be coming on the air with a couple of folks. I think one of them may be her videographer, perhaps, and another some of the people she's interviewed. So that should be interesting. It'll be at 9:30 on Monday. Today's the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, I guess it is.
9:30 a.m.
And, 9:30 in the morning.
And also you have Michael coming on, Michael Mayer, who's going to tell you about a sanctuary, more or less, he visited in Austin, right?
Possibly. Yeah, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. We talked about that, and he's a busy student, and he did just return from Austin on a kind of a homeless project. I think he went there to attend some kind of a project or a meeting there, organizational get-together. And, he did talk a bit about this Austin kind of a land program where homeless encampments or structures are being built on a piece of property. And
30 acres.
30 acres, yeah, I think that's right. That's what he said at the Huff meeting. Mm-hmm. Huff, of course, is the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom group that we got together with on Wednesday. Happens every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Invite people to come on down and check it out. It's at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Free coffee?
Free coffee, yeah. It's I don't know if that's very good for you, but sometimes it's, you know, it's hot and wet and, yeah, I mean, it's sugary if you like sugar. There's a, and cream is usually available, so that's nice. There are some things coming up. Today, as I said, I'm going to be focusing on interviews from the last couple of weeks. I actually finally ran across the tape. I'm still a tape guy, although I'm working, thanks to Michael here, Michael's tutelage here, to try to turn to audioing with, you know, seamless, that's not right the word, a thing that has no moving parts. These audio recorders apparently are much more durable in some respects, yeah. Or at least that the audios they create are more durable and more accessible and also more uploadable and downloadable.
That's
so
right.
That's right. One of the good reasons to do that. I'm still having my usual very long learning curve. Very long learning curve to actually do that kind of stuff. But I think I may get better at it. I'm still encouraging people and haven't done it yet myself, but I'm playing around with video and hoping other people will be posting video on YouTube and other places that graphically show what's going on in terms of police harassment of homeless people around encampments, harassment of street performers downtown, other incidents that occur that need to be visually shown to the community so that people won't just think, here's just another critic of the police. Oh, he's got an agenda. And it's very true. I mean, a lot of us do have agendas in the sense that those of us who have seen this kind of abuse want to have an agenda to end it. And the way to do it is to show it, and to show it in a fair and honest way. And that, I think, is what can easily be done, or perhaps not easily, well, actually a lot more easily than it used to be, on the using video. And hopefully that's going to be happening. Tip of the hat to Pat Colby, who has been working hard to do a number of things. Yesterday, she and I and two other Huff members, Nina and you, Mike, we went off to the city attorney's office. which, although it says Office of the City Attorney in big letters in the sign, we were informed by the secretary who tried to force me to leave.
The unfriendly secretary.
She didn't like something about the way I was talking to her. Maybe she, I don't know what she didn't like. But we went in there to present a disability accommodation request. I think I even may be playing some of that because we did audio some of it. And it is not, you know, it, I think describing it also covers it. The reason we were there was that Pat Colby is a person who's disabled herself and intends, well, she's going to talk about it. I don't want to really preempt her, but we wanted to find some way to get the city attorney to acknowledge that some people are disabled and so cannot really fit within the extremely strict guidelines of the anti-homeless downtown ordinances that criminalize people for sitting, spare changing, vending, performing, political tabling,
sleeping,
anywhere within within on 95% of the downtown sidewalks. And on 100% of the downtown area and the entire city area, on any public property, it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And illegal to have a structure or to try to intend to remain overnight with camping equipment, even if the weather is horrible. And even if that's your only means of survival, as it is for about 90% of the homeless population in Santa Cruz, we have no access to the 46 shelter beds that are only available after a month or two waiting list at the Paul Lee Loft if you aren't being excluded for one reason or another. So I'm going to turn now to some of these interviews, which we did, I think it was April 11th, I believe, and it was on the riverfront. We went down to the pedestrian bridge that's right next to the Highway 1 overpass over the San Lorenzo River, which is kind of midway between Denny's and the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it.
Ross's.
And it's also, of course, the shopping center that's called the, I guess, Gateway Center. And one of those, as you say, Michael, is Dress for Less at Ross's. Yeah. So
they pay for their advertising.
And in any case, we went there at 8:30 in the morning to get some accounts on a Thursday morning 3 weeks ago. as to what was happening with folks. And these interviews are what we did. We provided coffee, talked with folks, gave out some literature suggesting if people wanted to sign up to describe property they'd lost or problems they'd had, they could do that too. And I believe I have yet to post on Santa Cruz Indie Media an actual report of what we found, which was really very anecdotal. I mean, we're by no means an exhaustive study, but still, these stories are worth hearing, and I'm going to play them. But actually, before I do, because we began with this, you just came from this meeting of the Association of Faith Communities Steering Committee at the May 1st, the Calvary Episcopal, the Red Church, where people, on Monday nights, are able to eat and hang out, have coffee, and until they're shooed away by Joel Miller at 7 o'clock. Joel Miller.
Not a bad guy.
No, I like Joel, but I don't, the idea that suddenly his property becomes sacrosanct after 7 and people can't sit on the grass does piss me off.
Really?
Oh, of course. I think that, it's no harm for them doing that, except that, Joel is following concerns that people like Cynthia Matthews, former mayor of Santa Cruz, now still on the city council, who owns valuable property across the street instrumental in spearheading a campaign to defrock him, literally, to have him defrocked and removed as the pastor of the Calvary Episcopal Church. He had to spend 25 G's in church courts, some ecclesiastical court system they have here. And he won, but, took something out of him.
Yeah.
And even before that, he was cutting back on programs that were run by then... I know what her name is. Her name is Renee Curry, but what her position was, she was running essentially a 24-hour youth program at the Red Church, or a program that involved being very tolerant of people who were sleeping there, and that to some extent still happens. People sleep on the property, illegal for them to sleep on the property, not because they're trespassing, but because there's a camping ordinance that not only criminalizes sleeping on public property after 11, it criminalizes sleeping on private property unless you're behind a fenced-in front yard or side yard. And that, that's the law in Santa Cruz, regardless of the comments of Mike Rutkin, our former mayor, who you gave me a very vivid description. You provided me with a very vivid description of his comments at the American Civil Liberties Union, where he's on the board of directors, weirdly enough. On Monday, and he was claiming the sleeping ban. It's done by complaint. It's one of the nicest laws of all the communities. All the voters support it when he went door to door. Santa Cruz would become a magnet if it wasn't there. He has a whole series. He has a rap, which he puts out at a mile a minute. There did seem to be some dissenting voices in that ACLU meeting, and we'll talk about that in a moment too. And anything about this Associated Federation of Churches that came up? I see that there was a guest speaker, oral communications, and it was an open meeting. And I guess they were talking about Santa Cruz Homeless Connect, which is coming up on May 20th in Santa Cruz. That's the big everybody gets together.
Well, there's definitely people in there of goodwill and compassion. And we need more of these kind of people around Santa Cruz to balance out the take Santa Cruz home mentality and all the other negativity that's floating around. So, I'd be willing to encourage them and the pastor there as well. To lend my support, at least to see what they can do, give them a reasonable chance to see if they can bring some positivity to bear on what's essentially negativity and restrictive.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do they talk about? What are their plans other than simply trying to maintain their 7 churches that are open for 20 people?
Well, look, here's one thing that I found out what they do is on Monday nights, as you go down there, Robert, to get some recordings, they now, according to the pastor, what's his name again?
Joel Miller.
Yeah, Joel. They now have 10 minutes of silence for people to sit in the presence of themselves, their higher selves, or God, And I think that's a good step forward. I'm going to try to...
This is your meditation mantra.
Right. I'm going to try to take it from there and even make it more efficient by teaching them maybe a technique, a simple technique where they can deepen their experience.
All you have to do now is teach them how not to sleep the other, I don't know how many minutes of the day, and they'll be all set, man. So, I mean, that meditation is going to do a lot of help, except that when they try to sleep, somewhere in the city of Santa Cruz, there will be no place for them to go, and except for 20 lucky people.
They're two separate issues. The more people we have meditating here, the better for the overall collective environment, for the overall positivity. So it can hold the negativity. In other words, it can hold the negativity in check. In any society, there's a balance between positive energy and negative energy.
I don't think this is
scientifically shown.
Good. You better bring in the scientists. We'll see.
Did you look at that email I sent you on the science of meditation?
You know, I haven't read. It was a 10-minute video you sent me, but I mean, I do believe that meditation is helpful.
All right. Helpful
for people who actually do this. Mm-hmm. Whether it has any place and any meaningful solution for homelessness and the basic needs of the city of Santa Cruz, whether the resources of this church situation are being used in a way that really advantages people in the way that, you know, they could, is another issue entirely. And I think you catch with the tone of my voice what I think about that.
There's many issues, and some are positive, some are negative, but meditation overall is it feeds in positive energy.
I don't want to argue about meditation, but I'm glad that you're able to provide, you know, or they're interested in meditation. They're interested in prayer, I think. They have a Christian philosophy about what I regard as a mythical deity who watches over everybody, except, of course, for the people who are being murdered every day. I know it's all part of God's plan or whatever. I mean, you hear the atheist in me coming out, but that's not really important. I think churches often, a few of them, are far more caring and compassionate than, business-minded people, atheists of all stripes, people who are secular. So I'm not going to put them down at all. And, Father Joel's Red Church is one of the few places where people can actually, albeit for a brief period of time, and you heard my sarcasm about that, the idea that people should be able to meet from, 4:30 to 7 and then have to be excluded from the area because of what, you know. I mean, there's been some claim that, there's a day center nearby where children are at 7 o'clock at night. I'm not aware that's the case, but maybe it is. It's, to me, pandering to the paranoia of the Santa Cruz reactionaries and the gentrification people and the NIMBYs is a form of evil. It is evil. It is negative. And however, sprucing it up with a little meditation here and there and sprucing it up with a meal or two.
You don't obviously know the power of meditation. And that's obvious from our previous conversations. That's one of the reasons I sent you those scientific studies.
Well, I may take a look at it, but that's my point. Even if you had medical services there, even if you had, whatever you have there, the reality is, unless you are addressing the basic issues, you're not really dealing with the issue, and you're misleading people in some way. I think. I don't want to argue about it.
I know.
We disagree.
I know. But
you're going to be pounding meditation until the day you die, man.
You know,
that's your rap. And
the thing is, the answers to these difficult situations in Santa Cruz is going to come from compassionate energy if there's enough people with open hearts and compassion.
I don't know.
And
about that.
If there's a few leaders,
I don't agree with that. I don't think people need compassion. I think they need, first of all, to feel what their civil rights are and stand up for stand up for others.
Nobody's arguing that.
This idea of compassion is close to pity, you know. This compassion.
No, it's not.
Idea,
no, it's not. It has nothing to do with self-pity or any of that stuff.
You know, it's like saying, God, how good I feel when I give you a loaf of bread.
No, that's sentimentality. You're confused
well,
here.
Perhaps so.
That's sentimentality. Compassion is none of that stuff. It's goodwill if coming from an open heart.
Wrong with goodwill, but what we have is a lot of bad won't, and that's institutionalized in laws, and it doesn't change for people suddenly feeling very compassionate unless they have the courage to fight those laws. And as you say, you need...
We see an example of it at the meeting last week where...
Which meeting are we talking about?
We're talking about the ACLU. There was a Monday night meeting in the Loudoun Nelson Center where there was a lot of people, you could tell by the tone of the conversation, they were having some compassion for the homeless. But then we have one or two, like Mike Rotkin. Yeah, well, he stood up and was against the thing and wanted people to discuss it further. And you could see that he was not for lifting the ban on camping. So he's just a bureaucrat, if I may say so. And there's no compassion, basically, in his consciousness. I could see that. So I call it for what it is. He's a very good speaker, obviously, and he's been around the block a few times, but he's still a bureaucrat with a closed heart, basically. No compassion.
You know, I don't know if I would agree with that with respect to Rotkin. I don't think it's a matter of not having compassion. He has to defend his record as five-time mayor, which is where he is, you know, consistently opposed meaningful changes in the camping ordinance that would allow people the right to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And he backs this up with a whole bunch of misleading claims, some of which are simply false, others of which are partially true and partially false. And he's also, as you say, a very skilled speaker about the whole thing. And he also poses as, claims to be, very authoritative in what he's doing. It's interesting, at the meeting, I understand he and Steve Plaich kind of leveled off against each other. Plaich is also likes to think of himself as an authority, and so one authoritarian versus another, it might have been amusing to watch. But Plaich was trying to present the position. He's running for city council. He's an activist who was with Needle Exchange and now I believe is still with Suicide Prevention. He runs a group, it's actually sort of his own individual project, called the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project. And he's often at that red church which he talked about, Joel Miller's Calvary Episcopal Church, on Monday nights. And he was, as I understand, speaking, if you inform me correctly, about, he wanted to have a moratorium on the sleeping ban. And all sleeping bans, not just the city one, but the county bans, and also the state law, enforcement of the state law in the county jurisdiction, which is 647E, which is a really misleading law that says you shall not lodge. And as I understand it, I've been told that had to do with innkeepers in the 1800s. I don't actually know the details of the history. I've heard different accounts. I don't know which are apocryphal. But it's been used extensively against the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Santa Cruz movement about 2 years ago. It was used against homeless activists in 2010, 3.5 years ago, and almost 4 years ago, in their essentially peaceful demonstration in front of the courthouse. They weren't really occupying in the sense of anything. They were protesting, sitting on the steps with signs, and sleeping overnight because they had no other place to sleep. And they actually produced some meaningful changes there. Those who think that protest does nothing don't seem to understand that this protest actually produced the, if you're on the waiting list, your ticket gets dismissed claim and law by the city. But in any case, I guess I'm wondering, is there anything at this Associated Federation of Churches meeting which... any new plans, announcements? I know there's a Project Homeless Connect coming up, which is a one-day, very nice event for homeless people. I go there, or at least I have the last few years, give out flyers, and people can come and get some driver's license stuff dealt with and, pretend to get on the housing lists. I mean, not they pretend, do they get on them, but very few people actually get housing. You know, you get free socks, you get a free meal, you get, everybody's lining up to show how caring they are and so forth. And it's not phony. These people are sincere. They are compassionate people. See, that's my point. They may even be meditating compassionate people, for all I know.
They need leadership, of course. You know,
whether it's leadership or not, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of, you know.
And courage. They need courage and leadership is something that's needed.
You've got to look at the things straight on. I mean, it's like... I always talk a lot about the camping ordinance, and we talked about this at the Huff meeting on Wednesday, and that was, you know, we don't really need places for people to camp, and even Mike Rotkin would agree with this. We need housing. The difference between me and him on this is that for Rotkin, you only want to do this through a very legally step-by-step process where you get a buy-in from all the real estate profiteers who would have to give up their property. And all the NIMBYs who would have to deal with you know, who knows, homeless people, needles. I mean, they, you know, in the area, they're blaming homeless people for needle mania or for, you know, improperly discarded needles. And so because of this, the obvious reality of hundreds of vacant buildings in the county of Santa Cruz, and I don't have a list, but I know that a list of city-owned property was made 14 years ago at our demand or request or pressure on then-Mayor Christopher Crone. And not one of those places was offered as any kind of refuge or sanctuary for people. Instead, they prefer to arrest people, to drive them away, to make it inhospitable. And for us who are talking about, you know, oh, a legal place to sleep, a legal place to camp, a sanctuary for 100 people, as Brent Adams has proposed, as you know, as a model project that might eventually lead another project. Oh, let's expand the church program from 20 to 25 or 30. Maybe another church and two more churches. Maybe five. Maybe we'll get 40 or 50. You know, that does not address the real issue, which is that there are vacant buildings right now, tonight. And people will say, well, what are you going to do? And the answer is, it's a very good question. Because we also have talked about, at the Huff meeting, we talked about making a listing of all these vacant buildings. And I think next week, one of our plans is to actually do a protest in front of one of those vacant buildings. The Rittenhouse complex downtown, for example, near the Cinema 9, has been vacant for 4 years or more since it was built. It's this huge mausoleum that sits on the corner of, I think it's Center and Pacific. It's right down there, right, you know, kind of kitty corner from O'Neill's. And, you know, it's a huge waste of space while people are cold outside. And it's true of a number of buildings all over the city. I mean, even office buildings, you know, they're vacant at night. I mean, the city has made it illegal to sleep in non-residences. That's another aspect of the camping ban that's little known. You are not allowed to sleep in a restaurant, in a theater, after 11 o'clock at night, or in any other building that isn't a domicile or intended as a residence. So even churches are illegal to sleep in, because churches are not residences. Churches are different kinds of buildings, is my understanding.
They do it anyway, right?
Of course.
Okay.
In fact, the whole program was for years based upon people going to churches.
Yeah, it sounds like the logical solution, the use of the churches at night, because there's lots of space in some of those churches. But is there any precedent for opening up vacant or public property to homeless? Is there any precedent anywhere in the world?
You know, I got to say that in spite of all my years, I mean, I've read probably dozens of accounts of mm-hmm. people taking over buildings. I've been involved in some of those actions in different cities, mm-hmm. even in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works.
Mm-hmm.
But to give credit to what you said earlier in the program, to some extent you are relying upon the compassion of the public and their possible outrage at people being arrested or penalized for engaging in the kinds of protests that bring these issues to a head. And we, for example, 20 years ago when we were doing protests, we were able to open up areas not so much for sleeping. Well, we were able through our protest to get the deputy chief of police, then Dunbow, to agree with kind of do a behind-the-scenes deal that opened up the so-called Back 40 for 2 or 3 years as a sort of a de facto camping area, tents down in the day, for much of the summer months.
Where's that area now?
Now it's covered by the Page Smith Community House and the Homeless Lack of Services Center buildings, which were built over it. And there have been other examples of where that's happened. And indeed, we're in a new time, and things can happen that are new here. But perhaps what we should do is turn to the what the people are saying, who are actually impacted by these conditions, and who are the what I call displaced urban residents, although perhaps way displaced way back when, because the buildings that could have been used for them have been torn down and areas gentrified. Ironically, it's been pointed out, as Peter Marin pointed this out, as the economy improved, he's a Santa Barbara writer that we've had on the air and a writer for the homeless publication Street Spirit. As the economy improves, ironically, things get worse for homeless people, because areas that were sort of Skid Row-ish type areas that served low-income people, flop hotels where people could actually get cheap rooms, they are redeveloped. Cheap housing is torn down for condos. All the stuff you already know, Michael. Yeah. And don't you fall asleep on me. Keep meditating here.
I know. I'm yawning. Yawning is good for the body.
I like yawning
relaxes.
Myself.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, if you'd like to call in and join the yawn here, it's 427-3772. 427-FRSC. Let's hear some of these interviews from early April.
And it's about 8:30 on April 10th. And folks are getting coffee and sugar in their coffee.
Oh,
and a huff table here is huffling away as we try to find out what's going on in terms of police harassment. We're talking with
Bob Acree.
And Bob, what have you experienced, if anything?
Basically, just you can't sit anywhere on the levee. I mean,
can't even sit down.
No, like right here, we can't. Yeah, we can't sit there. But like the rangers, they'll let us sit here in the morning and stuff, get warmed up. But usually it's the cops that come by and say, nope, you can't sit there, you got
to
leave.
Are there any particular cops that seem to do it? Or do they all do it?
Yeah, I don't pay attention to each one.
About what time do they usually come by to disperse?
Ranger already came by. They usually come by around 8. But then it all depends on which cop it is.
Okay, you know,
because yeah. Well, no, usually Romero will let us sit and do stuff, but as long as we're not drinking beer and stuff, you know, where everybody can see us. Because that's what we do here.
Free coffee.
Yeah, I'll go.
All right, man.
Hey, morning, Bobby.
So,
like a cookie?
Oh, nothing.
What's the best time, Bob, to show up here if you want to get the maximum contact with people?
Oh, heck, right now. I mean, anytime.
Earlier or later? Or
no, this could be. Anytime. That's usually when we're sitting here first thing in the morning.
You've been outside for a while.
Robbie?
No. I just had a hear about this. Go ahead, Bob.
I actually walked inside the 49ers store down on Pacific. I had my backpack on. And when I walked in, the first thing the guy told me was I had to buy something if I wanted to be in there to look around. And I had my 49 Jerry Rice 49er jersey on. I'm a Niner fan, been one for years. And I'm looking at the guy kind of like, you know, that's pretty rude there, mister. So,
Had you had any previous history with this guy or the store?
No. I always walked by it, wanted to go in and look, and I actually went in and spent like almost $100. It's like, okay,
how long ago was that?
Like a week ago.
And how long ago was the exclusion?
What do you mean?
No, when did they tell you to leave?
Oh, that was the first thing he told me. He didn't tell me to leave. He told me that I had to buy something if I wanted to be in the
did
store.
Did you buy something?
Yeah, I spent like almost $100. I mean, but, you know, I went in there for the purpose to buy it.
Well,
you know.
A very patient man, I must say.
Anger management. Dr. Lang, Kansas City, Missouri.
I see.
It does wonders.
Thank you.
So, has that happened to you anywhere else in Santa Cruz? Or?
I went into the bookstore after that. And then the guy was in there flirting with some lady.
Which bookstore?
Cup store down. Not sure what the name of it was.
Logos?
I'm not sure, but
near the bookshop, Santa Cruz, maybe.
It was
near the Scribner statue in front. The statue of the guy with the saw.
I'm not really sure, but basically I walked in there and I was, you know, asking where, you know, books on marijuana was, and he's like, over there. And then I was over there, and then he's flirting with some lady, and then I'd start laughing after the lady left, and I told Mama, you know, I'm all, maybe if I look like her, you know, I, you know, get better help. And he looked at me and started being a total dick, you know, saying, oh, well, you need to leave, and da da da. And I'm looking at him, I'm like, I'm planning on buying books, man. I'm married, and it's kind of like, wait a minute, you know, yeah, you was flirting with that chick, you know, I bet you wouldn't have been doing it when your wife was there, but, you know, it's, yeah, you know, treat people like, you know, shit. And like she said, even people who aren't homeless, if they think they're homeless, they treat people like shit, you know.
Any hassles with police or Parks and Recs people?
No, not really. Not unless, you know, I'm drinking beer where I ain't supposed to be drinking, you know.
Drinking it or drunk in public, which?
No, drinking.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
What about backpacks in cafes? Have you been, do you ever carry a backpack into a cafe?
I normally don't go into them except for like Denny's or something, and but no.
How's Denny's treating you?
Denny's is all right.
Santa Cruz, how about the Santa Cruz
diner?
Yeah.
I haven't gone in there.
Because it's too far away or because of bad reputation?
I got a long board. No, I just, I'd rather eat fast food unless I go to Denny's. Yeah.
I got you. No hassles at McDonald's or elsewhere?
No.
Well, that's good. And we've been talking with
Bob Acri.
Thanks, Bob. This should be. You got 3 camping tickets along Highway 1?
Yeah. And on the other side of the fence was where I got my last one.
How long ago?
And that was like 4 months ago, 3 months, something like that. Yeah, probably 4 months ago. The cop kind of, you know, woke us up and told us that, you know, we were trespassing because the trespassing signs on the fence, but I told him I thought it was for the other side of the fence, you know, because that's where most trespassing signs are, where you're not supposed to trespass. Don't go past the fence, and it wasn't for that, it was for the Caltrans area.
And this was more recent, or this was also...
No, that was like 5 months ago.
Now, what about recently? Have police laid off? You've been just more cautious? What's the story?
No, I just... Actually, I was inside the loft at the shelter for 3 months. And so I just...
How'd that go?
Went pretty good. You know, I just came back out on the street like a week or so ago.
And normally it's a 1 month in the shelter. They gave you a particularly extended stay. What was that?
Well, I was an employee at the shelter, and I also helped paint it and clean it up and stuff, so...
They gave you a little extra time.
Yeah.
And again, we've been talking with...
Bob Acri.
Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
We're talking with
Veronica Crow.
Go ahead, Veronica.
I was parking my van up behind Emmeline.
Gotcha.
And where all the work trucks park.
Okay.
And I didn't go there until after 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
Left at 5:00 in the morning before anybody got there. Never bothered anybody. I don't do drugs. I don't do, you know, I don't party. Nobody knows where I park.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can't park there. I get hassled every time. They wait for me to come.
When did this begin, this intense
morning? As soon as this thing happened.
This thing meaning?
The crackdown on the homeless.
Well, a month, 2 months, what's your feeling?
Like a month.
For the last month, then.
And it's like now I have, no matter where I park, I get hassled. You know, they bang on my van and rasp me in the middle of the night and say, you got to move. I said, where do you want me to move? You know, I'm not bothering anybody. You know, he says, well, there's no camping. I said, I'm not camping. I'm studying, and I just passed my Apple certifications to be a Mac technician.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get off the streets. You know?
Which they say.
It doesn't matter.
When was the last time you were approached by these folks?
2 days ago.
And I'm not going to ask you where, because I don't want to blow up your site, but were you really visible? Were you really hidden? Was it somewhere in the middle?
No, it was somewhere in the middle, you know, and it wasn't that I was... like I said, I keep to myself, you know. I close my door and that's it. Nobody knows where I park.
Mm-hmm.
And I have cancer. I don't do drugs. I can't, you know. It's not in the program. And I mind my own business, you know. And it doesn't seem to matter to anybody where I am. I'm a bother. I'm a nuisance. I'm a piece of shit. And the fact that there's less than 5% of the people that actually get up out of the streets. I'm one of them that I'm trying. You know, I start a job in 2 weeks.
People cycle through, and you should be able to do that, too.
Yeah.
You know, who knows. But what about downtown? Any hassles downtown?
Oh, yeah. I'll be sitting down, and I'll say, what are you doing? Let me see your ID. Do you have any warrants? And I said, Excuse me, I'm just sitting here having a cup of coffee. I'm not bothering anybody. Why are you rousting me?
Are these police who do this?
Yep.
Or a security guard?
Both.
Hosts? How do hosts treat you?
Pardon?
The hosts, people in, you know, the bumblebees?
Oh, no, the bumblebee people haven't really given me any hassles. But the cops and the security guards.
Bumblebee people, by that he means the hospitality, so-called people. I call them the hostility because of their hostility, the basic rights, although their hostility is very well covered with friendly smiles. They have a very positive attitude to eliminating rights. Perhaps they meditate regularly when they do that. I don't know.
They always ask me. They say, you know, what are you doing? Why are you here? You got to go. You got to move. You can't sit here. You can't stay here. You know, and it's like, why? I mean, what am I doing? Am I breaking any laws? Am I smoking? No. In fact, one time I got a ticket for smoking, and I was standing on in front of Santa Cruz coffee roasters, and I had my cigarette like this that wasn't lit. And the guy said, oh, there's a cop down there, and I just dropped my cigarette like that, right?
You just dropped it on the ground.
I just dropped it on the ground. And so,
littering!
5 minutes later, the cop comes up to me and says, let me see your ID. I said, for what? He said, smoking. I said, I'm not smoking. He said, yeah, you were. I said, no, I wasn't. The cigarette's out. It's right there. I smoke cigarettes that go out so that, you know, they last longer. And, you know, I smoke one cigarette for about an hour. You know, I take a couple hits off of it and whatever. But if I were smoking, he should have came over when I actually had the cigarette in my hand and I was smoking. And I still got a ticket, and I still had to pay for it.
Some good citizen probably saw this criminal behavior and had
you... Oh, absolutely.
Cashiered, yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. And, like, a couple of times, you know, I don't have money for coffee, and I'll ask somebody for 50 cents.
Panhandling!
Whoa, my God. You know, and like, people say, you can't do that down here. You know, that's against the law. Blah, 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 blah. And I said, well... how would you feel if you wanted a cup of coffee and you can't get one? What am I supposed to do, you know? I mean, it's a dollar refill at Pete's, you know, thank God they do that. So that it's...
Is Pete's non-discriminatory generally?
Yes. They're very good. They're very good about...
I was hearing that we initially thought they had backpack bigotry, but now...
No,
we don't.
They're very...
And actually, you were telling me, Michael, you were at Pete's this morning...
I had 3 cups of coffee there, to tell you the honest truth.
Did you spend $3?
I did, and it's $1 for... I have my own cup, so it's like $1 each for a refill. So that's pretty...
Did you have a backpack with you?
No, but I did have trouble there in the past when I came to town first. But the staff is... I noticed the B standing for bitch. The B wasn't there, so she's not on the staff anymore. So basically, the staff.
I have
changed.
Heard, as I mentioned on the in the recording, that Pete's, after they initially told us we don't allow no stinking backpacks, even if they don't stink. That wasn't an exact quote, but they did say they had no backpack policy. When we asked a whole series of restaurants one night, I think you were on that trip.
Yeah, I came along somewhere.
Then later, they apparently changed their policy, or claimed, actually they claimed they misunderstood. They said.
Yeah.
You misunderstood us. And I said, well, I tend to know English, but I'm glad you changed your policy.
Yeah, yeah. I think they did change their policy.
But did you notice anybody indoors with a backpack on that occasion? Or do you go there regularly?
I don't go there that regularly, but I probably will because it's a good venue for me in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll keep my eye out and let you know. But, no, I didn't notice anything unusual. They were friendly enough to most people there, so... I think they've changed their staff and
Excellent.
Changed their policy.
Good work, Pete. I'm glad to hear
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, good
Let's
work.
Let's hear some more again. We're listening to the April 10th, not the April 11th, if I didn't screw up my dates. On Thursday interviews when we were giving away coffee ourselves with so-called Cafe Huff down by the riverside, which is right next to the pedestrian bridge outside of the Gateway Shopping Center on the levee.
Good. They're very good. They don't bother anybody.
You've been a patron there for a while?
Pardon?
How long have you been a patron there?
Oh, 6 months.
Okay.
And they've never once either denied me the refill because they didn't see me earlier or whatever. They become my friends. They say, hi, Veronica, how are you? You know, and it's like, they don't bother me at all. You know, they're very, very, very friendly towards the homeless. And
any hassle for gender identity?
Yes.
And is that, have you been in other cities? How does it compare with elsewhere?
It's worse here.
And is it worse recently, or has it been pretty much the same?
It's worse recently. It's like, it seems like everybody, like, because the cancer brought my beard back, you know, and I don't always have a place to shave, you know. I still have somewhat of a girlish figure left. So most of the times, if I'm clean shaven, I'm treated as a woman. But if I'm not, oh my God, I get looked at like,
what the fuck are you, man?
What the fuck are you? Exactly.
Well,
you know?
You know, those of us who are unused to these gender things, I am, for example,
yeah,
are very, you know, nervous because our conditioning is, you know, Ulster. So, well, we've been talking
about... On the whole, most people are misinformed about transgenders. You know, they assume that transgenders are transvestites, you know, and there's a transvestite, a transsexual, and a transgender. The transvestite is one that just dresses up for sex. Okay, a transsexual is...
That's organic. It tries to make structural changes,
yeah,
in their body.
Exactly. But they don't feel like they're in the wrong body. A transgender, they're in the wrong body. When I was 7 years old, I went, no, something's wrong here. This is not right. And, you know, I've had to fight all my life because of that, you know.
And we have been talking with
Veronica Crow.
Thanks, Veronica. So, you say that there's a crackdown by Emmeline social service workers?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've been cut off three times for no reason whatsoever. And they said, we sent out the notice. And I said, I never got it. If I would have got the notice, I would have been here. And you didn't do it. And so, just because of some misunderstanding in paperwork, I got cut off. And then I had to wait another month and a half until I could get my benefits again. And then that's when, you know, I'd get harassed for panhandling because I didn't have any money. And I live on $101 a month.
Well, live more frugally, Veronica.
Oh, yeah. I think that what they should do is they should take all those people that are harassing us,
yeah,
and put them in our situation, mm-hmm, and put them in a place where they have to live on $110 a month. They got to have no place to stay. They don't have any, and then see if they can do it and see how they feel when somebody comes up and says, hey, you can't sleep here.
You can't sit here.
I can't sit here. I can't stand here. I can't smoke here. I can't do anything here. Can I breathe here? Am I allowed to be here, you know, physically? I mean, God damn. It's just ridiculous what they're doing, you know? And for them, we're the homeless, that's what makes Santa Cruz great. You know, I mean, that's what Santa Cruz has always been about. You know, down on the mall, there's always been street performers and shit like that, and people that make jewelry and you know, da da da. Everybody's just trying to.
Make but the jewelry. Homeless don't do that. The homeless just look around for homes.
No, that's not true.
No, that's not true. Well, thanks for the update.
You know, and you get harassed for trying to sell the jewelry that you're making to make money to live on. You know, and it's like, that's fucked up. How can you do that? You know, and now with the smoking ordinance, oh my God. You can't smoke. They made it now so that you can't even smoke on the side streets. You have to go all the way to Front or to Cedar Street. And I got ticketed for standing on the side street and smoking.
And again, we've been talking with
Veronica Crow.
And I think that we've talked about this before on the air, Michael, but, you know, it is, to me, the smoking law was clearly an anti-homeless ordinance. It has, you know, I mean, it's sort of part of the mystique of the health cover that, you know, is supposed to, you know, address the health of everyone, but let's let the cars plow on through with their exhaust fumes and so forth. But smoking, you know, is is a no-no. I mean, I'm not a fan of smoking, and really myself, I always say this, and it's true. I easily get a throat that's irritated. I have friends who have severe asthma who, you know, when they get around smokers, it can be serious for them. And so I understand the, the concern, for at least for a certain portion of the population, about secondhand smoke. But since the homeless do smoke in such much greater percentages, like 70, I think it's 75% or 70% of the homeless smoke compared to 17 or 19% of the population generally, and the fact that they don't provide smoking areas, for example, in such large parks as San Lorenzo Park, indicates that this is simply another tool, as the police like to call it when they ask for more tools, to address behaviors that they consider to be inappropriate, to interrogate people, to ID them, to search them, and so forth, when they have no probable cause of any crime being committed. They create the crime, so then you can do all these things to the person. And people say, no, police wouldn't do that. And the answer is, yes, they do. I mean, and they've done it for decades. And they don't consider it the wrong thing to do. They consider it they're defending the safety of the community.
It's in their mentality, yes.
Yeah, it's up to the rest of the community to say no. You know, you serve the public. You don't serve, a police state agenda. And the trouble is, the police state agenda has become the Santa Cruz agenda, at least more recently, in a lot of respects. Though, I have to say, going back to your ACLU meeting that you had, I have been almost relentlessly critical of the ACLU on this program. And when I see people on the street previously friendly with me, comrades in arms at Occupy Santa Cruz, such as Jay and Mithril and Danny, who've joined and Steve Plage, who've joined the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, I immediately take up with them, why hasn't this board, passed resolutions at least oppose in principle seizure of property, destruction of people's right to sleep at night, driving people away from public spaces because of their appearance or apparent homeless status, using the pretext of, you're in the forbidden zone here or there, sitting down, you sat on a bench for more than an hour. You've sat with a little sign on the sidewalk for more than an hour. You have to move because nobody else needs your place, but you still have to move.
Most of these are civil rights issues as well.
So the American Civil Liberties Union has done nothing about these issues for decades, and specifically the most notorious and obvious one, the sleeping ban, has not been addressed. But perhaps as a result of...
I blame the over-influence of people like Michael
Rotkin.
Okay.
Yes.
People like that who oppose positive resolutions that are going
see,
around.
See, Mike Rotkin, it's not that he's got some, bee in his bonnet about how bad homeless people sleeping is. It's that he has come into a situation, he's a practical politician, and he has seen the best way to what he feels retain social services. He favors social services. He calls himself a socialist, Mike Rotkin. And he feels that the only way to do this is to appease or placate a certain segment of the community by maintaining this, he wouldn't call it an anti-homeless stance, he would call it a stance designed to make sure that Santa Cruz only gets its fair share of homeless people. That is to say, give the police extensive powers, which he claims are not abused. He has said this time and time again. So it's not an agenda. It is an adjustment to an existing institutional structure that is really a function of the people in power who have been in power over the years and the police department itself, which is a very powerful group in the city. I mean, it and the Parks and Rec Rangers take up half the city budget. That's where the money goes. And it's, I suppose there are some things the police department has asked for that they were turned down on, but I've never heard of any. I mean, they probably, they've asked for, they probably cook up their deals with the staff before it comes to the city council meeting, and then, it goes on through like shit through a goose. Whether it's license plate recognition software, which was an issue that the ACLU took up, whether it's the police department was not the main pusher of the sidewalk shrinkage law that reduced the available sitting space to and drove away street performers like the great Morgani or made them illegal. I mean, if you go down Pacific Avenue, you'll see them there, but most of them are in illegal spots. I saw that yesterday. They're playing, you know, near the Pacific Trading Company, which is illegal. They're playing very nicely. People like them. They aren't being hassled at the moment I pass by, but they are risking being hassled. And that means risking a serious ticket, seizure of your instruments, the humiliation of having to deal with somebody who talks to you like you're a six-year-old, you know, and who tells you to move along even though you thought you were a citizen in a free country. You know, illusions die hard in this country. So, but I just want to say that the American Civil Liberties Union at this last meeting that you described for me, apparently, and a hats off to Danny Etler and Jay and Mithril and Steve Plaich for finally at least saying a little something. They didn't pass the resolution about the sleeping ban. It's true. They said they bought into this, oh, well, we have to wait and discuss it some more and yada, yada, yada. One of the problems was, as I believe, Plaich put up a resolution that not only said, let's put a moratorium on all these camping ordinances for a year in the city and county, but also let's establish a group for a homeless issues task force kind of group that would look at real issues in the city. He acted as though this has never been done before. He doesn't understand it has. Such groups usually go nowhere, or if they do go somewhere, they are ignored. That's been the case with the homeless issues task force from the city, which was headed by Linda LeMaster back in 1999 and 2000. It's also the case with other groups which claim to, you know, which have, they recommend the obvious, end the camping ban, things of that sort, and they're ignored.
Who funds the task forces when they do come around?
Well, you know, in the past they've been formed by the city and county, government bureaucrats or elected representatives. And recently, Plaich has also called online on the Santa Cruz Indy Media for a police review board. That's been tried, too, in Santa Cruz. It's not a bad idea to have, it's an important idea to have civilian oversight and citizen oversight of the police department. The problem is, when you try to make it a government agency, you run into things like the very powerful police lobby, which has recently, through the courts in the so-called Copley decision in San Diego, essentially crippled even the very limited police review that was in force in places like Berkeley and San Francisco, making it impossible to expose to the public police misconduct, making it a secret personnel matter unless somebody gets it on videotape. And that really is what we have to do, is get police misconduct on videotape and, you know, demand answers from the police department. I mean, you know, Vogel and Clark, the bosses in the police department, should be confronted every time they go out with the demands. What have you done about Officers Vasquez slamming to the ground Richard Hardy? You know, why is Officer Martinez still walking around with a badge after he drew a gun on Jasmine and her husband and her mother at the Salvation Army Thanksgiving meal? We don't get any answers to these questions. But one of the reasons we don't get any answers is because we're not asking the questions and we're not asking them loudly enough.
Have you written to about those or?
Oh yeah, repeatedly.
Looked for answers.
Oh well, yeah, I mean every time I see Vogel, you know, well, not every time, but I say, all right, what's going on with this? And he says, oh, it's under investigation. Of course, that was a year ago. They got long investigations in this city. You're tuned to Free Radio. I'm here in the studio with Dr. Michael O'Grady. My name is Robert Norris, and this show is called Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. If you want to tune in and have a listen, you obviously are if you're hearing me, but if you want to call in and have us give a listen, you can at 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772. Maybe you disagree with something I'm saying. Maybe you think that, you know, I'm not presenting the whole story. Maybe you feel I have a bias. I do have a bias, for sure. But maybe you feel I'm presenting things inaccurately. If that's the case and you have new evidence or an opinion you want to present, please do call in 427-3772. And while you're pondering whether to do those, push those buttons, 427-3772, let's listen to a little music from a musician who's been driven off the mall. He is no longer there, he says, because he encountered too much harassment from the police. That's C.J. Stock. But here he is when he was on the mall. And here's some of his music.
Christopher Robin and I walked along beneath branches lit up by the moon, posing the questions to Adam and Eve. Holidays disappeared all too soon. See, I'm wandering much further today than last June. I've got to find my way back to the wood. So help me if you can. I've got to get back to the house if you're going one by one. You'd be surprised, there's so much to be done. I've got all the bees in the hive. Chase all the clouds from the sky. Back to the days of Christopher Robin and Pooh. Now Winnie the Pooh doesn't know what to do. He's got a honey jar stuck on his nose. He came to me asking help and advice, and from here where he goes, no one knows. So I sent him to ask how the hell if he's there, how to loosen the jar from the nose of a bear. So help me if you can. I've got to get back to the house if you're going one by one. Would you be surprised? There's so much to be done. I've got all the bees in the hive. Chase all the clouds from the sky. Back to the days of Christopher Robin.
Bike and traveling through,
yeah,
can get through.
Thank you, Hannah. Or should I say Ranger Hannah?
You can call me Hannah. That's fine by me.
Hannah, not Hannah. Let's get that straight. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
We're sitting here right next to the pedestrian bridge looking out on the rather small San Lorenzo River at this moment. And I'm talking with a guy who doesn't want to be on tape, but he's told me that things are pretty mellow with the Rangers and he hasn't been hassled much and things seem to be okay. Does that cover it, do you think, pretty much? Am I being accurate there?
Sure.
Okay. And, yeah, it's about 9 o'clock, and it's kind of mellow. Is this the right time of day to pick people to come to this place? I'm going off tape. We're going to have an anonymous report that there has been some concern that Monica Martinez, who may or may not be retiring as the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, one, doesn't get out and mix among the people, and apparently, two, doesn't deal with problems that arise when clients are badly treated. Does that fairly cover it, do you think?
I think people are treated the way they expect to be treated.
Huh. And I'm told that our man here says that people are treated the way they expect to be treated, but I don't think you expected to be treated badly, did you?
No, none of us expect to be treated badly. It's your behavior.
Can I record this?
I don't.
Go ahead.
You know, I don't think the behavior... You shouldn't hate the person. Hate the behavior. If the behavior is bad, hate the behavior. Correct the behavior, and it's all good.
Got it.
You know?
That's essentially the way to deal with it, I think. Any other thoughts?
I don't know. It's all good.
You want to expose yourself and say who you are?
No, I'm not exposing myself.
He refuses to expose himself. Anyway, thank you. Appreciate it. Here at the footbridge, there's a couple signs. Welcome to the San Lorenzo Riverway. Hours sunrise to sunset. Prevent erosion by staying on the path. Authorized vehicles only. Is it actually illegal to cross the bridge at night? Or no, that can't be right now. No. But it's illegal to be on the pathway, so you have to fly over the pathway in order to... kind of interesting at night. Yeah. Well, I guess you can walk through. We're out here with a table on the... right off the path. You heard the ranger came by and pleasantly told us, don't block the path. And of course, we weren't. blocking the path.
Sure.
You know.
Why not?
But we have some activists here who are sitting with signs, sleeping is a necessity, not a luxury. Even poor people must sleep.
Nice idea.
Stand against, sit, lie. We will not disappear. Have a good day.
I made this form for intake, and then Robert made a nice one.
And we have a couple of activists. What's your name, activist?
Pat Colby.
What are you doing here?
Well, I'm just trying to reach out, get documented data to show what's being done, what civil rights are being violated of the poor and the homeless here, because people are saying it's not happening. And so when we start showing this data, then we're going to say it is happening and it needs to stop. And things need to change. We need to get rid of those outrageous ordinances.
Now, what impression do you get today talking to folks?
I get a lot of them are being harassed at the homeless service center.
What kind of harassment are they reporting?
Well, one woman said she's been hit there.
By another homeless person or by a staff member?
She didn't say, but she's been harassed by staff members there.
What kind of harassment did she complain of?
She was kind of didn't really want to talk too much because she was afraid of retaliation, which is a lot of problem with the homeless service center. Because if they find out that you talked about what's being done to them there, they ban you off the campus. So you don't get access to free food, showers, or even a place to stay, even though they have bugs and stuff there. It's cleaner to sleep outside than it is in the homeless service.
And if anyone has actually been banned for exposing abuses at the homeless service center or complaining about their services, I would like to hear it, because while Pat says that, and I don't doubt that it may well be the case, I have not actually heard of a specific case other than one which involved instances where people were actually protesting in a vigorous manner. Abuses that were happening there. I'm not saying one shouldn't protest. I think that's appropriate. And I have not heard specifically that criticisms lead to banning, per se, or talking bad about the homeless lack of services center on the radio leads to banning. I have heard secondhand reports, and I heard one direct report that somebody who went on this radio program was later ticketed by police at his or her campsite, and I don't know whether there was a direct connection between them. They were on the radio. They felt there was, but they didn't say whether the police officer said, "We heard about you on the radio, and we're coming to get you." So that it's not clear that that was the case. But I'm always impressed with the courage of homeless people willing to go on the radio. I tell people I'm there for free radio. You want to talk about it, you can. And I've been accused of blowing up people's campsites by revealing their locations. I don't do that. I think if you look back at my tapes, you'll find I don't do that. Some people voluntarily talk about it, and I advise them, "Do you want to say this?" And they say, "Yeah." And I commend them on their courage if that's what they want to do. But it's like another mythology that some activists like myself go get other people arrested and then retire to our homes, or our, in my case, rooms. And that isn't true either, in terms of the kinds of activism we do. We usually, the activities where we're involved, we are a part of the group that gets, if we're engaging in civil disobedience. And I don't know if any other homeless people wanted to record city council idiocy, but I was, I was recently arrested at city council on April 1st for trying to tape record there. In opposition to the wishes of Mayor Lynn Robinson. She wanted me to move a tape recorder, and I've discussed this on the air. And actually, my court date is coming up on May 6th. I'll try to give you an account of whether they're actually going to file those charges or not, which should be interesting. I've been doing it for a long time, tape recording. And I guess the ACLU meeting even mentioned it, but then didn't do anything about it. I think they had a second meeting on Tuesday, the next day, but I haven't heard any updates. I've asked... I asked for an update, and I haven't heard back from the gang what's going on there. But I'm glad to hear that at least in the rarefied atmosphere of the... wasn't entirely closed. They apparently let you stay through the entire meeting, Michael, on Monday, even though you're not an ACLU member. And they said you would have to join in order to be...
Not yet. I probably will join.
In order to be allowed in the room. That's what the chair told you. But then the chair apparently ignored that. Did he forget you were in the room, or why did he allow you to stay?
He was friendly to me. I was friendly to him. You know.
I see. So you kind of got on his good side. He made an exception in your case. He just doesn't know what's really going on. But you're appearing on a radio show, and where a vicious critic is cross-examining you.
On the other hand, Paul Gold, what's his name?
Peter Geldblum.
Yeah,
he's the chair.
He's a nice enough guy. I did attend the county police commissioner's
the sheriff's forum that was held the same night as the Monday ACLU meeting.
I put in a piece of paper my questions, and the first one was. Do any of these candidates have a military family background? Because, you know, I'm against the force that police are using on the people. And then the second question was, how many people, if any, each of these candidates have shot, killed, shot dead, or shot in any fashion? And my third question was, what are they going to do about the solitary confinement in the jails that go on for 10, 20, 30, and in one case I know of 40 years in solitary confinement with no light, no natural light, no window? I wanted to know that. But he probably thought my questions were too far out to the left or right, and he didn't include them in the...
Who is he?
Paul.
Paul?
Paul, the Peter? Chairman.
Oh, you mean Peter?
Peter, oh, sorry.
Peter Geldblum.
He's
the chair of the ACLU here.
Even though I think he's a nice guy, he conducts himself very well at the meeting. But, you know, he obviously thought my questions were too far out to the left or the right. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a nice guy at all in terms of how he treated homeless people who came to the meeting a year ago. And also, I think he's...
Really?
He's an opponent of open access to the ACLU board, and that I don't blame bureaucrats for doing that. In the sense, I do blame them, but I understand that's what they do. What pisses me off is when allies don't stand up and protest this, and that's what Plaich, for example, refused to do a year ago. Though, later meeting, he made an attempt to change the rule. There was no rule about, as far as I know, about the ACLU having closed meetings. Or at least it hadn't been the case for the last year before that. I keep saying this. And again, I promised myself I was not going to talk a lot about the local ACLU because we need a group that's actually concerned about civil liberties. And insofar as a few members of the board there are concerned, although not sufficiently publicly concerned to get much done in a real open way, although they have spoken to some of them, including Ron Pomerantz and Mithril, at the city council on a few of the laws that have come up. Often laws that aren't really directly impacting homeless people, but on occasion they've talked about that. But the obvious positions that the ACLU and other cities has taken opposing the most obvious violations of human rights, these people just don't seem to have... I guess they claim they're working steadily on it. I hope they work harder. Bob LaMonica is a candidate for the Board of Supervisors, running against Ryan Coonerty, a former mayor, a kind of part of the Coonerty clan that runs the bookshop Santa Cruz, and the author of a number of anti-homeless laws and anti-public access practices at City Council. He is running for the Board of Supervisors, which is a much more powerful position and a much more lucrative one. And the only one running against him is a guy who hasn't got a... ghost of a chance of winning, but who nonetheless has better positions, and his name is Bob LaMonica. And Bob is a man who's very outspoken. Someone called him is a zealot on a number of issues. And Huff at the last meeting, stop that crackling over there, has asked Bob to present a number of issues at the remaining three forums that are coming up. Those are the forums. I guess there was one tonight up in Davenport for the sheriff's department, the three sheriff's candidates. And the questions we asked him to do, we asked him to speak up on issue, to oppose all sweeps of homeless people living outside where they're not offered substitute housing in the county as well as the city, fully fund services that do not, which currently do not even meet minimal needs of homeless people, the bus out of town service as a disgraceful signature for Santa Cruz, immediately decriminalize sleeping in a vehicle given the utter lack of housing and shelter services and the fact that for many poor people emergency housing is a car. When residents, homeless residents living outside are displaced by such things as fire emergencies, they will be offered real emergency shelter like any other resident in an emergency. Dump the chronic offenders program collusion with downtown reactionaries. That's what the supervisors are doing. As a red herring program that is costly and foolish, that scapegoats rather than solves, oppose jail expansion, fund rehabilitation and other in-the-community services. And I would add demand countywide renter protection, if not rent control ordinances, even considering the Ellis Act, which is the law that gives landlords so much power to engage in vacancy decontrol. So when you move out of a place, they can, you know, eliminate rent control there. That's their power under the Ellis Act, passed, I think, in the 90s, to destroy rent control locally. And expanded protection for trailer parks and mobile homes that have some form of rent control protection in the county, mostly in Capitola, I think. But I think that extends in the county. It was destroyed in the city by Mike Rotkin, the socialist, you know, the one of his socialistic measures, no doubt, when he sold out both the De Anza people and I don't know if he was on the council. I don't think he was on the council when the Clearview Court mobile home park was, the rent control was removed there in spite of promises to the residents that it would not be. So that's something else that happened at the Huff meeting on Wednesday. Let's get musical for a moment, and I'll be right back. I want to remind you there is a call-in number here if you have any breaking news. I understand there was a march today from the town clock at 4:30. There was a meeting there and then a march downtown celebrating May Day, International Workers' Day, and also International Women's Day, I think. I may have that wrong, but I think that's the case. Call in, 427-3772.
Shine upon my brow, let me be free once more. Let the golden drops fall upon my brow, let me be free and innocent like a child. And today's feeling is too damn good to give a care anyhow. Let the riblets and riblets and riblets and droplets fall upon my window pane. Let me be free and easy again. Yes, let me be free again. So let it rain, let it rain, let it rain, let it rain, let it pour. Let the liquid sunshine upon my brow. Let me be free once more.
Another one by C.J. Stock from his album, which I picked up 9 years ago, Downtown on the Street, when he was still performing down there. The first number we heard was House at Pooh Corners. This one was called Let It Rain. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert. In the studio with me is Michael. If you want to call in and chat with us, you can. I'm muzzling poor Michael, who wants to talk about CO2 emissions, and I've shut him down. Michael, take 30 seconds to talk about CO2 emissions. What?
Okay. There's a new study out, and it shows that there's a record high CO2 emissions in the world. This study just came out. It's on today's paper. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a photocopy of this and send it to the White House addressed to Barack Obama, because they have got to make a decision on the XL pipeline going through the United States. And under these kind of circumstances where the CO2 has reached a record level, it's not a good idea in my mind to allow this project to go ahead, at least at this time.
Fair enough. Well, we'll wait for Barack's, no doubt he'll be flying to Santa Cruz to give a response personally.
If there's anyone out there interested in this project, do the same. Get that article, make a photocopy, and send it to the White House, care of Barack Obama.
Yeah, I'm sure that there'll be immediate response, but good luck with that.
There'll be some response, hopefully.
Well, I think it's good. It's always good to lobby, as long as you don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear some more from the street. Again, going back to April 10th, and the voices from the levee, who are being churned up by donations of stimulating coffee, which we were filling people with.
The armory is either closed or closing shortly.
And it also has lice.
And
they're... It's in an uninhabitable building.
I understand it's the 15th, and also once it's closed, there'll be, only 46 places at the Pauley Loft as a, relatively... It's not a drop-in center, but it's...
You want to know
The waiting list is shorter, or at least you can get in there for a month without getting into a program, though that may change.
Now, here's something interesting about the Pauley Loft, which somebody has been researching about how much funds was given by HUD to build that. And it was given enough funds to build that at the time, whereas it was built about the same time as my Section 8 apartment with the same money that has 50 units, including one bedroom, two bedrooms, and three bedrooms. And for them, they only created 46 spots.
I'm talking 46 cots, really. Probably.
Yeah, cots.
I've never been actually in there, so I'm not quite sure what the layout is.
Michael, you've been in the Pauley Loft. What's the layout there?
I'm basically staying there at the moment, and I find it a reasonable place. I mean, there's problems in there with homeless people. A certain amount of them are...
We're talking about the layout. I don't want to hear about
the
need for anger management or meditation at this time. The reason I mention that is her point, Pat Colby's point, is that the same amount of money produced 50 units with 1, 2, 3-bedroom places.
Really?
And instead you get 46, for 50 people, now you get 46 cots. I mean, this is an example of shortchanging homeless people, in the most egregious way. It's like telling, it's like you're saying to homeless people, we'll provide, let's imagine that Brent Adams Sanctuary Campground gets passed, which I'm afraid it won't. But let's suppose it does. You offer people a small number of, tents for a small number of people when, in fact, there are vacant buildings everywhere. It's a real insult to people. It's outrageous that people would even talk about this stuff with a straight face, but they do. And I do, too. So, we all get kind of wrapped up in the mythology, the ongoing mythology, whether it's hysteria around needles, which provide actually far less of a danger than probably all kinds of other objects which you might cut your feet on, which don't spread disease when they're on the ground, usually, unless you happen to be a medical technician who dropped it on the ground of the hospital right after it was used, and that are very, there are very few of them compared to the number that are turned in, and what's needed, of course, is more effective needle exchange. Instead, people who are drug war zealots want to destroy needle exchange based on the police everything and make sure everybody is watched every minute of the day for doing what, particularly homeless people are monitored and are denied access to the thing that people in houses have. I don't like it.
I basically, I know Pat Covey maybe speaking correctly there, but I would need to see the actual cost analysis of both places to compare.
I think that's true. That's
you
fair.
Know, I don't think you can build I don't know how many apartments. Did you say 40 apartments?
50 apartments.
50 apartments. I don't think, and that small, that's only a small room, really, with lots of cots doubled over. It's not...
Well, the point is that there must have been an incredible waste of money, is her point. And again, I think it would be nice to have the documentation out there. I imagine if you email her, she may provide it to you. You never can tell.
No, I think the loft is actually needed. It does serve a need for single men, single women. It provides a need for them, and it's definitely needed.
It doesn't provide a need for single men and women. It provides a need for 46 men and women.
Right.
Single men and women don't have any services. A tiny percentage do.
All right, a small.
Yes, it's misleading for you to make those kinds of statements. They do that all the time. I don't like that, and that's why I interrupt you.
What's misleading?
Use a generic term for single men.
All right, well,
it's an option.
I'm using the numbers now. So 46
for a small percentage of the single men and women.
Yeah, small.
That's
okay.
What you mean.
All right, that's what I mean. Yes,
right.
Yes.
The question is whether it's overpriced or not, and I think that's a really good question. I don't have the answer. We just have Pat Colby's claim here.
Yeah, that's just her opinion right now, and
she claims to have some documentation.
All I'm saying is there is definitely a need for this service, and it could be there's a need also to expand
there's
it
a
beyond
need for
46.
Housing. I don't know if there's a need for a bunch of cots where you're supposed
you're
told like a six. Not that too. I would say that instead. You don't need to have a place where people are reined in at 10 o'clock at night like six-year-olds and told that they can't do this and they can't do that and
no,
so forth.
You only need it till there's enough housing for everybody, which may take
But there is enough housing. See, that's, again, you buy into the mythology. There is enough housing tonight. More than enough housing for everybody, but in fact, it is being hoarded by certain groups of people.
Yeah, that's to do with I think capitalism, money, ownership, and greed.
Let's not pretend that it doesn't exist. It does, and that's why when you make these statements, they are misleading statements. And I will challenge you when you make them.
Well, you can challenge me. My statements weren't
misleading.
They weren't misleading. They might have been not broad enough.
In any case, I don't like
them. Not broad enough, but I'm sure if they're not broad enough, you'll remind me.
Definitely remind you. Let's hear some more from April 10th.
Brett, have you been in the Poly Loft?
Yeah, I'm staying there right now.
What does it look like in terms of the space for each person?
It's actually not bad place.
There you go again.
It's strangely laid out. There's in some sections there's lots of space between people. In other sections they're crowded on top of each other. So I don't know who the architect was, but it seems like it's a little unusual. But overall, it's actually not a bad place. You know, it's comfortable enough.
So you don't have any sense of what the actual space is for the average person there?
The space? Well, they're bunk. They're bunk.
Bunk beds like two or three high?
Two high. Yeah.
Okay. And did you pick up lice there, or you picked up lice at the Armory?
At the Armory.
You personally picked up lice?
Yes, that's why I don't sleep at the Armory anymore.
Have some coffee.
But the main reason why I think at the Armory the lice infection is because a lot of the mattresses are cracked. They have cracks in them, deep cracks in them, and they really need to be resuscitated. They have a number of new mattresses with new plastic and folding them. It needs to be done for hygienic reasons, and they need to be resuscitated, those mattresses.
I got you.
They're very old.
Anything else about the Poly Loft, which was the original question?
Which loft? The loft?
Yes.
No, the loft is overall a pretty good idea.
You have to go to the bathroom at night. Do you have to go outside to a porta potty? Do you actually get to use the facility?
In the building itself, there is.
What's the waiting time in getting in the Poly Loft?
Well, that's the thing. It's sometimes not so easy to get in there.
How long did it take you?
It took me a month or two.
Okay.
And do they let you know what spot you're on? You know what number you are on?
They give you a number, a bad number.
Yeah, but is it consistent? You know, when you call?
Because no, she's talking about On the waiting list.
Yeah, the waiting list.
Well, I don't know. I don't have a lot of information on that, so I really can't tell you.
Go ahead, Pat.
For the exact same amount of money that they made those 46 cot spaces, they built 50 units.
You already said that.
Yeah, I didn't know if I made it clear.
You did. But you reiterated. That's good. Talking with
Kim.
Kim, you say you are tired of
the police profiling you.
And how has that happened to you recently?
Well, every time that I'm sitting somewhere, they tell me to move. You know, and I don't think I look. Maybe I do.
No, your clothes are clean. You know, pretty clean. I mean, it looks like, you know, you have a raggle taggle purse with a. You know, that's not the most fashionable purse, is it, Kim?
But I mean, I can't sit anywhere.
When was the last time you were told to move on?
Okay.
And where were you when you were told?
I was sitting on some lawn over there by the Bargain Barn.
And was it private property?
I guess it was, but I was just sitting there reading.
And who told you that you couldn't read on the lawn?
The security.
Here comes some more security. Get your video out.
Yeah, that's them right there. They're going to tell you right now to get us out.
Hang on. So, come on through. Mike, got to move out of the way, Phil.
Okay.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
Good morning. How you doing?
Good.
Make sure to keep the path clean. We're going to have constant traffic. That's all.
All right. No problem. You take care.
You too now.
All right.
Watch your toes.
My toes are watched. We're good. You got about a foot leeway here. And a truck drives by with rakes and shovels and so forth. Go ahead. You were saying, Kim.
Yeah, it gets to where we can't even sit down anywhere. Even on the benches downtown on Pacific, I've been told to leave.
And who told you to leave those benches?
The police. Said I was sitting there too long.
Yeah.
When I see people with computers sitting there all damn day at a restaurant.
And did they come up with a stopwatch and tell you how long?
No, I was just reading. I had just sat down, in fact.
Maybe 1 minute is too long on Pacific Avenue.
I guess so. And I've been told about my dog not being able to be. I've been told that there's no dogs on Pacific, which.
That's not true. And no dogs at night.
Well, nobody told me that when I see other people walk their dogs at night.
Right. Well, you know, you're a different class of person.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It gets kind of boring. It gets kind of sad.
How long you been walking around outside these days? How long you been outside?
Second year.
And has it gotten worse, better, the same?
Worse.
And it's worse because?
Nobody. I feel sorry. Not that somebody should feel sorry for you, but nobody cares.
Nobody offers to help or shows any empathy with that sort of situation.
And I don't beg for money. I don't beg. I don't sit there. I just mind my own business. I try not to even go around people. I mean, kind of by myself.
And also, you're a woman.
Yeah.
How does that impact your being outside?
I don't know. I think other women stare at you.
And what about, are you facing any kinds of risk, assault problems, rape, theft, anything like that?
Theft, but not anything else.
Are you able to handle yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I better watch my step.
No, I just would not let nothing happen to myself.
All right. And you're out, you're pretty much outside every night.
I've been in with the loft lately.
And how's that going?
I don't like it.
Because?
I don't know. Those girls are crazy in there.
You mean it's an uncomfortable environment?
Uncomfortable environment.
In terms of volume or in terms of something else?
It's just in terms of something else. It's just, I don't know, it's just weird. I don't like it. I'd rather be outside.
And how long have you been in the loft?
About a week, and I'm not going to go in anymore.
Is it the crazy people in there that bother you?
Yeah. They say I'm stealing and stuff, and I haven't taken anything from anybody, and I just mind my own business.
Maybe
so.
You should become a master thief. What do you think?
I guess so, maybe.
Now, that might be more lucrative. Then everyone would give you a lot of respect.
Guess so.
Particularly if you become a banker, then you could really make it.
Yeah.
We've been talking with
Kim.
Thanks, Kim.
And did you have any thoughts on that, Michael? I think you said you were in the loft with Kim, or
no? I do have a thought or two on it. Kim was saying that she people in there are accusing her of stealing stuff, and so there are a lot of meddling people in there. As a matter of fact, in my corner of the loft, there is one reasonably stable guy like myself, but the other two people, you never know what mood they're in. It's like tiptoeing through eggshells. You know, they can be in a bad mood and start effing and getting into an argument with you for nothing, just to release their own negativity. Or sometimes they go at each other. But the point I'm making is the guy that argues a lot, just in the bed under me. He spent 30 years in jail. So that's what I'm talking about. You have to deal with these unusual characters who have a lot of negativity in their nervous system and fight a lot of the time and are very emotionally unstable. So that lady is quite correct. There's all kinds of people in there you have to deal with. And she was saying how they accuse her of stealing stuff, stuff like that. I remember talking to this lady.
Appreciate it.
Cool. We're talking with
Cody Wilson.
And Cody, yes. You're outside. How long you been outside?
I've been outside now in Santa Cruz for 10 days. I just came from Madison, Wisconsin, and it's much harder to be outside there.
Really?
Horribly. You know, six people died last year of temperature.
How about the way people are treated?
Not with as much care as here thus far that I've noticed, you know. I can only speak for myself, though.
And were you outside before when you were living here previously?
Yes, for about 7 or 8 months.
How long ago?
That was about 14 years ago.
And so you've been inside since that time?
I spent a couple years in Madison, Wisconsin inside, but then I've been outside in Madison for the past 2 years until I came here 10 days ago.
So you've been squatting and such?
Yep. A buddy got booted out of his crib because he couldn't pay for his, you know, mortgage or whatever. And so they... sip of booze, they still have a place to stay when it's freezing. Otherwise, you know, those people end up dying. You know, they had a couple of drinks, their blood's thin, they don't realize it, they freeze to death. Mm-hmm. And so there's no place for them to go. You know, if your clothes maybe smell like you had a beer a couple days ago, they won't let you in. And, you know, people die because of that, which is really unfortunate.
And there isn't room for less than a small fraction of the population anyway, right?
No. They're completely jam-packed. First come, first serve, and they turn away a lot of people. And, you know,
is there
in the
Minneapolis
summer months,
or are we talking
this is Madison, Wisconsin. And, you know, in the summer months, that's, you know, at least tolerable to the point where you won't die or have frostbite. But
is it illegal to sleep on the streets in Madison?
Oh, yeah. They'll rouse you off the bench quick, dude. Right. Super quick.
And what about sitting down on the sidewalk?
We
have a law against that.
I heard, it's, you know, they'll mess with you here, but I haven't noticed it in, you know, Madison. Yeah.
You kind of look,
but
I can't. Surfer dude kind of look to you.
Sort of. Yeah, I get messed with if I don't have a collared shirt on.
You have a colleague here.
Yeah, it's my buddy Mike.
What's your name, Mike?
Mike.
I figured.
Yeah.
And are you local or out of town?
Sacramento, actually.
And how long you been here?
I've been here about as long as about 2 weeks.
And you're outside?
Absolutely, yes.
And what have you noticed in town?
A bunch of bullshit, excuse me.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I did notice that I can't sit on the sidewalks. The whole can't sit on the benches. And it's even actually worse in Sacramento. That's why I wound up here. You know what I'm saying? Sacramento is the capital of California, so we should have a little kind of bit of resources there possibly, right? No, it's like way worse than here. Like 100% worse in every way.
I know they sell the newspaper Homeward there. There's the, what,
yeah.
Loaves and Fishes.
Right.
Is there, and there's some kind of pushback. In Sacramento, there's, you know, what's it called? There's a homeless rights group there.
Right. There's safe ground there, which is pretty cool. But the problem out there is that, like, gang violence pretty much has just gone through the roof in the last few months. So, like, the whole homeless community is pretty much getting taken over by the gang community, which is a whole different thing.
What does that involve when they get taken over?
I mean, it's just, you know, everybody's doing the same thing. The whole drug scene is kind of wrapped up all together, you know what I mean? And the police are kind of thinking it's all the same thing, whether you're homeless or part of a gang.
So
it's kind of
treating homeless people as gang.
Like gang members, absolutely.
But the gang people are not, including the homeless and the great arm.
Ridiculously, unfortunately, yeah, exactly like that. Yeah, crazy. It's crazy in Sacramento. Absolutely crazy. Crazy out there, bro. But yeah, that's why I wound up here. It's certainly better here, but still, there's still all kinds of crap going on here, too. I did notice the sidewalk thing. Like,
well, you're both invited to come to the Huff meeting, which is every Wednesday at 11 at the Sub Rosa. And also,
no, I know where Sub Rosa is at.
Awesome.
That's the coffee shop.
Yeah, I got you. This gives you gives you times also of the radio show in case you want to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, this is on free radio soon.
It'll
right?
be on free radio probably tonight. And also archive.
Yeah, I've actually worked for WRT 89.9 for the past 6 years, volunteered in Madison. I did like a socially conscious hip hop show there.
We'll
so
get a program here. Then.
Yeah, that's kind of why I was looking for your email actually.
Yeah, we'll get in touch.
Do you have a way to get a hold of Linda?
Yes, I do. Linda LeMaster.
Yeah, I need your email. Yeah.
Let me do this off tape. We're talking with Becky Johnson in her modest cloth coat. Actually, it's kind of a woolly looking coat.
It's kind of like Pat Nixon's cloth coat.
Indeed, there you go. And you say you had a chat with Take Back Santa Cruz people.
Apparently, they do a little walking patrol of this area every day, and there used to be 5 or 6 people who regularly came down, but now it's down to 3.
Well, they don't need to. They have the Parks and Rec Rangers and the police.
They certainly do. Right. And so one of these gentlemen here along the riverbank told me, he says, oh, there's Take Back Santa Cruz. I said, what? And he says, oh, they come through here every day. So
do they offer coffee?
They went right by our coffee table here and didn't stop to get coffee. And then they walked all the way over to the Java Junction and bought coffee. I mean...
Well, they're trying to patronize locally, Becky. Yeah, that's Take Back Santa Cruz trying to do its bit.
Did get a Take Back washer.
They are capitalists, yes.
So like? Yeah. And a couple arrive with a baby in a carriage and a, you know, a skateboard. Any reports from the street, by the way? Indeed, that's one way to put it. They've got your goat, is that what you're saying? Any street reports? No? Okay. Talking with...
Garrett Hahn.
And Garrett, you just came from Nevada?
Nevada, Las Vegas, correct.
And you say it's harsher in Las Vegas?
The police, Metro Police out there do not like the homeless. There's absolutely no resources for the homeless. You do not have a place to get breakfast, lunch, dinner. Food is completely on your own.
They're encouraging you to move on.
They're very encouraging you to move on, correct. I was there for 10 days before I came here. I was out in Los Angeles, went to Las Vegas for a court case.
Case murder, assault, rape?
No, simply possession. And,
possession of?
Of marijuana.
Marijuana? What's your deal, man?
Class B felony, they got me on that. And
so are you facing a prison term?
I was facing a prison term.
How did you deal with it?
Luckily, I got probation, and I'm out here now. So, but the 10 days I was in Las Vegas, 4 of those days I was detained, put in handcuffs, and fully searched my bags, everything, and I wasn't even jaywalking. I was simply walking down the street with a backpack on and looked a little homeless.
How did they know you had marijuana? Was it the smell of the evil marijuana upon you?
It must have been the smell, yeah.
Could have been the cap with
It could have been the cap, or maybe it was just the clothes and backpack I was wearing. That
doesn't seem to say anything about marijuana. Yeah. Nor do your clothes look particularly distinctive. Maybe they're just very sharp-eyed there.
It must be something. They just seem to like to harass you if you don't look like you're going into a casino to spend a bunch of money.
Now, you've been back here for 10 days, you say?
10 days, correct.
And what have you noticed since? You've been indoors, outdoors?
I've been outdoors. I've been fortunate enough to sleep at the Armory a couple nights and be indoors a little
without
bit.
Without getting lice?
Yeah, without getting lice, correct. I've been outdoors. The police out here are definitely more friendly, although they have ran me for warrants a couple times already out here for really doing nothing wrong.
What was it that they stopped you for?
Actually the day I got here, I got off the bus from San Jose, and I was here about 15 minutes, and I was walking down town, and I stopped to talk to a couple people that I just met for the first time, and I don't know how long they were there. They were probably loitering a little too long.
Loitering,
yeah, in downtown. So I was there about 5-10 minutes, and cops pulled up and said that they were harassing people on the street or something like that, and I was now included in that group, so they detained us.
Built by association.
Yeah, yeah.
As it should be. You've got to watch your associates very carefully in this town, son. You can never tell who you're sitting next to. They might be a criminal sleeper, for one thing.
Criminal sleeper, correct,
right.
Yep.
If there are chronic offenders they're trying to take off the streets, you could join that August, and you could, well, hopefully you won't.
I think jail is the only legal place to sleep, because anywhere else you sleep, it's either private property or it's public property, so it doesn't really matter where you lay down, it's illegal.
Get a job, pay a rent, and, you know, pull yourself up by your own stoop, perhaps.
You know, getting a job is a great idea, and I'm looking for one, and I do believe I can get one. That's not a problem. Luckily, there are showers at your hand over here at the shelter, and, you know, there are resources to get a job. Not a problem. The problem is rent. It's about 4 times more expensive than it was in Las Vegas. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible how high the rent is out here. So I don't really know how that's going to work out, but, you know, getting a job is the first step, that's for sure.
You're here.
I'm here, yeah.
Hey, man.
Garrett Hahn.
Thanks, Garrett. Here we have a man who does not get harassed by police. Your name, sir?
Daniel Lack.
And Daniel, are you outside?
Yes.
And how long have you been outside?
About 3 years.
And have you ever gotten a ticket?
Nope.
Have you ever been awakened by the police?
Nope.
Is your grandfather the head of the police department?
No.
I just wanted to make a check on that. Are you simply the slipperiest guy in Santa Cruz?
I guess so. I'm the only one.
Are you, do you sleep in a group or alone?
Sometimes with a group.
And do they ever get harassed?
They have.
And how do you, so you abandon your colleagues as they get, you throw them to the wolves?
No, it's not like that. It's I leave early in the morning, mm-hmm. and I don't return to my camp till night time after all the rangers and everything is gone.
You have a somewhere between a day pack and a backpack. Doesn't that make you a somewhat suspicious character?
Not really. It's a regular backpack, but it's not full.
I see. So it's sort of half full.
It's half full.
And are you a working man or are you a shirking man?
I'm not a working man, but looking for work.
What kind of work do you do?
Welding, fabrication, construction, landscaping, remodeling houses, all kinds of things.
You're not one of those thieves we've heard so much about among the homeless, dope peddlers and vicious convicts.
No.
Released on the population, the innocent population, dropping needles everywhere they go.
Nope. Nope.
What about that needle situation? Have you been running into needles a lot?
Every once in a while. Yeah. Every once in a while. It's a rare occasion, but it does happen.
And in your 3 years, how many needles would you say you run across?
A couple handfuls.
And have you ever poked yourself with one?
No.
Have you heard of anyone ever being poked by one that you know of?
Yes.
And what happened there?
And they went and got checked out.
And what did they find?
Nothing.
Now, wait a minute. We've been told it's a danger. It's a very great danger.
It is. It is. Because, you know, you never know.
You never can be sure.
Who stuck themselves?
Arrest them. Kill them before they do anything more. No. Get them out of our town. Get rid of the needle exchange.
Well, actually, needle exchange is a good thing. I support the needle exchange because if there wasn't the needle exchange, the drug, the AIDS and STDs and all that would be way worse. Because
that's their problem. Let them die more quickly.
You
know that I posted an opinion piece by one of the participants in the needle exchange, and they got 26 in 6 months. They got 2,600 needles more than they gave out.
Yeah.
So does that sound like a failure to you?
Would you like to share 2,600 needles? A needle 2,600 times?
No, but I'm saying that they got extra back, more than they even exchanged.
She's defending the evil needle exchange. How can we let this woman do this? She's obviously crazy.
I support it.
You're both crazy. What about you, sir? Are you crazy, too?
We're all a little crazy. You're quite right.
No,
I'm just panicked, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Who again we're talking with?
Okay, I got kicked out.
Your name again?
Veronica Crow.
And you say you've been kicked out?
Out of Starbucks and Santa Cruz Coffee Roasters, both for asking someone in line for a nickel because I was short a nickel for a cup of coffee.
And handling in a private organization?
That's right. Oh, God.
Shocking.
Oh, shocking. Shocking, shocking.
And when was this?
A whole nickel.
Well,
you know, I
nickel
mean,
can go a short way these days. Now, how long ago was
about,
this?
About 4 or 5 months ago.
Have you been back to these two?
No. I'm not allowed in. I'm not allowed in.
But they don't. But you're a customer. Why not? You
wouldn't even know.
Well, I did go back in one time to Santa Cruz Coffee Roasters, and they wouldn't serve me.
Really?
They
knew who you were.
They
a chronic offender.
Chronic
one of the chronic offenders.
Of panhandling for a nickel.
Well, you know, that panhandling for a nickel leads to panhandling for a dime.
Yeah.
And then a quarter. I mean, where's it going to end?
Where's it going to end? That's right.
Yeah,
next thing, it's like, hey, do you have $50 for makeup?
Yeah, and then it's, you know, armed robbery from Wells Fargo. What can you do, man?
I mean, that's fucked up. You know, I mean, it's not like, I mean, asking somebody for a nickel is, in my mind, not asking for much. You know?
No, but you have Wells Fargo putting together a manual to let their lawyers how they can forge documents to show that they own
just
property.
Trying to finish the foreclosure business. You have no respect for our Wells Fargo executives. They need to have the kind of backing that forgery is such a nasty word. Let's just say creative accounting.
Creative accounting.
Yeah,
creative accounting.
Nobody says anything to them, and yet they hassle this young man.
They're the biggest lender in the country.
Yeah.
Or they were, anyway. Again, we've been talking with
Veronica Crow.
Thanks, Veronica. Yeah. And, of course, the other man here is...
Yeah, they make...
What's your name, Mr. Complainer about Wells Fargo?
Anonymous.
He's anonymous. Afraid the Wells Fargo are going to get you.
And Wells Fargo made $13 billion last year, I understand.
Well, a small price to pay for a fine bank.
And they're upset about somebody damaging the wall for a few dollars.
Well,
you know?
We can't have vandals running around Santa Cruz doing whatever they want, occupying buildings, claiming that vacant buildings are the crime. What kind of
of talk is that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What kind of world are we living in?
Indeed. I'll be training this woman in how to answer questions. Have you been arrested or ticketed for sleeping?
Yes.
And when was the last time that happened?
Yes.
And what time of the morning were you awakened?
5.
And were you alone or in company? Did other people get tickets with you?
Yes.
And how long ago did this happen?
Yes.
And what about your doggie? Did your doggie get ticketed?
No.
Excellent, you see. Did you get hassled for having a doggie?
No.
And have you been hassled anywhere in town for having a doggie and perhaps sleeping outside?
No.
And are you having a good time?
Yes.
Would you like to say who you are?
Yes.
What is your name?
Yes.
You are Yes? We'll call you Yes. Anything you want to add, Yes?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you for talking with us. And what is your dog's name?
Pith.
Pith. Thank you.
And that's about it for Bathurst Spears Broadsides. We have another few minutes before the show ends, and we have a worthy sub for Uncle Dennis's from the Cream the Drugs. The Dregs. The Dregs? I'm not sure. Anyway, they're something like that. That's a three-hour show that Uncle Dennis does, but I think he's running around fishing somewhere, or maybe, I don't know, saving the whales, whatever Uncle Dennis does when he goes on vacation. So we have one of our other broadcasters who is going to fill in for Uncle Dennis. I'm going to play a little more CJ Stock, sort of as a going-away gift. And then I'll be heading on, moving right along, and remind you that Annette March of the Oral Histories Project, where you can go check out oralhistoriesproject.org to see and hear some of the accounts of homeless people that she has been gathering, or go to the public library. I think there may still be an exhibit there that she's done. She's going to have some guests in the studio with me on Sunday morning. And a tip of the hat to Steve Argue, who pointed out Seattle workers just won a $15 an hour minimum wage, while the cheapskates in Santa Cruz, with an even higher cost of living than Seattle, are only paying workers, what, $7 or $8 minimum wage here? It's pretty disgusting and disgraceful.
Yeah, I'm moving.
And, there's threats to move. My goodness. I may be reading Steve's account when I come back on Sunday. I think there may be a special session of the City Council on next Tuesday, but the regular session comes up on May 14th, and that's going to be a week from Tuesday. So if you want to reach me between now on Sunday, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will respond, and we can chat, whatever. And until then, happy trails, and here's a little more from CJ Stock.
come.